actually built the practices that people aspire to create.
History will prove one of us correct.
Wait. You're not letting me finish, bro.
This is how you become bulletproof.
Well, Brian, you have the esteemed pleasure of coming on multiple times. Maybe this is like even the third time, but you are our go-to legal expert. We actually just saw you this past weekend. Craig and I were in Orlando at the Inner Circle event, and it was good to see you. Good to see you there.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to avoid you guys, but like you were.
We saw that. We did keep
hunting you down. If David, really.
So yes, I did run into you guys down in Orlando. No, it was really good to see you guys. Thank you. I think this is like my third or fourth time on the show, and I'm excited as always to be here. I never get tired of chatting with you guys. It's always a lot of fun, and this is really great. Thanks.
Yeah. So you were on a panel. You know, I guess what I want to start out with, Brian, is probably some of the similar content you were talking about on the panel. I think what people are most interested in is the pulse of the space. And there's probably no one who has more of a pulse than you in terms of transaction volume, in terms of what you're seeing, how interest rates have affected, you know, transactions, things like that. So let me put a pin in that one for a second. Wasn't that kind of the context of why you were up on the first panel?
Yeah, I mean, it's very challenging right now, the environment, and more than ever. I mean, even during good times, people are curious, you know, what's going on out there. But right now, people are really nervous about a lot of things with good reason to some extent, you know, and they want to hear about, you know, how we're going to navigate these times. And it was funny, Craig, I think before we got on the show, was like, I don't want to hear about everybody doing a DSO. Well, you're not actually. What you're going to hear about is same store growth. I mean, the key in an environment like that, I mean, it's good to go back on. If people, you know, wanted to pull up our other podcast and it was all about DSOs and rolling them up and multiples of EBITDA, we're not going to talk about that like a super amount today. I mean, a little bit, it's still going on, but the key for this marketplace is same store growth, because with the interest rates up, the cost of labor being up, inflation mm-hmm. being very high, the M&A activity is much more constrained than it's ever been. It's still going on to an extent, but it's certainly not the same explosive of environment that it has been. So when you want to grow in the absence of M&A, how do you do that? And that's same store growth. And that's whether you're a solo practice, a group practice, or a DSO. So that's, and that, as you might remember, Peter, was a huge focus of the panel I was on down at the Inner Circle meeting. It was same store growth and how innovation can assist with same store growth.
Yeah, you had talked about, you mentioned that you were kind of excited about like some of the financing products that were on the page. So break down what, if everyone doesn't know what same store sales growth is, or it's just the unit growth of that particular location, right?
Yeah, without buying anything, you're going to increase your EBITDA. You know, you guys remember from our many discussions, the whole game is EBITDA. Again, even if you're a solo practice or a group practice or a DSO, the whole game is EBITDA. And if you're not growing your EBITDA, you're not growing. You guys remember, sometimes you could grow. Like, I bought another office. Right. I actually have another office. But if you're losing money and you're not growing your EBITDA, you're not really growing as far as I'm concerned. So the key to growth is increasing your EBITDA. You increase your EBITDA two ways. You guys remember the whole M&A discussion we used to have. You buy more EBITDA, you do an M&A deal. But in an environment like this, where it's very difficult, you know, to get M&A deals done because of interest rates and inflation and cost of labor and other things, the other way you grow your EBITDA is through same store growth. That just means you haven't bought anything. You haven't done an M&A deal. You've just increased
profitability
of your office. And there's lots of ways to do it. I assume we're going to talk about it, but there's lots of ways to do it.
Hey, Brian, we just got back from a mastermind retreat. You know, we coach about 25 to 28 dentists on an annual basis. And it was interesting. This kind of topic came up, and I kind of echoed the same thing you did. And it was interesting how many people just don't even have a baseline of what their EBITDA is. So, right, obviously they're getting P&Ls. Every dentist is getting a P&L from their accountant, but that's not the same. Like, net profit is not the same, obviously, we know, as an EBITDA. So we encouraged everyone was really excited about just forming a baseline of where you are so that you can calibrate that, even if you're not in the market. Because because what you don't want to do is be like, all right, I'm ready to sell or something like that. And you just have no clue as to your trend over time has been.
I mean, it's reckless and irresponsible. I mean, I'm an educator. I educate people. I don't judge people. And there's a lot of people listening to this that don't know what their EBITDA is. So I'm not judging you. It's fine. But you have to figure it out. Like, even if you listen to this and say, this is a call to action, let me figure it out, because it's reckless and irresponsible, I feel like, not to know the value of your enterprise. Mm-hmm. I mean, forget about whether you're going to do a deal or not. Wouldn't you want to know? For most folks listening, this is their baby. They created this organization or this practice or these practices from the ground up, and you've put all your heart and soul into this for many, many years, most likely. Wouldn't you want to know what it's worth?
Yeah.
Even
from a net worth perspective, yes. Right? I mean, you'd have to be able to say, all right, well, let me extrapolate and apply 5x earnings or 6x or 7x. I guess that's so much predicated on interest rates as maybe you can tell us, but how can we
even have an intelligent discussion, Peter, about same store growth? If you don't know what your baseline is, if you don't know what your EBITDA is, how can I even tell you if you've achieved same store growth or not? Because you don't even know what it is.
Yep. What are you exactly? And that's why we kind of encouraged everyone. I think there's only a couple people who knew their EBITDA, and we encouraged like, hey, just establish a baseline, not like you're going to market, but like, you know, give you a goal of something to grow year over year.
Well, there's another layer to this, guys, in that most dentists are solo practitioners. And they don't actually pay them they don't pay themselves an associate wage. So they have this artificially elevated level of profitability because they're working for free. Mm-hmm. So they may tell you, I have a net profit of 45%. And then
They're not paying themselves.
Yeah, right. So that's like the first hurdle. Like, this is so dumbfounding when we bring up to the average dentist. Like, I don't understand what you mean. Like, we're trying to distill this concept down of entrepreneurial profit, meaning you make $1 million at gross sales, you did 500 grand, you should put in a placeholder above the line of whatever it is, 25, 27, 35, something, because you can't just be a placeholder working for free.
Why wouldn't you pay yourself, Craig, a percent of production, whatever it is in your marketplace, 27, 29, 32?
Because they're solo practitioners. I can answer that, because they're solo practitioners and everything flows to the bottom. So what's the point is what?
Well, it's also a little bit more, it's more sobering than that, Peter, because when they put in 30%, they realize that they actually go negative. They're in the red.
I don't think that's the reason that it's not implemented.
No, it's not the reason, but it's a very sobering exercise when you actually put in 30%, you realize your entrepreneurial profit, the profit you get for running a business, if it's single digits, that sucks. That's hard. That's a hard pill to swallow. We've been there, Peter. We've run operations that were not as profitable. But I think when you talk about the same store sales growth, I think this is just a function of normal business and the end of ZIRP, zero interest rate policy. It used to be DSO 1.0 or whatever you want to call it, DSO of 2 years ago and before, you could just gobble up and aggregate a whole bunch of mediocre practices, and voila, the market now says just because you've assembled them, they're now worth something, you know, more because they're assembled together without even a major platform.
Like a duct tape DSO.
It's a duct tape DSO.
Listen, Kelly Blue Book is over with. Okay. That's another term that I used like around 2017 or 18. If I said, hey, where are you guys? Hey, I'm in Florida. I've got 8 practices and my EBITDA is $2 million. We went to the Kelly Blue Book. Okay. This is what somebody's going to pay. And we were pretty close. That's what somebody would pay. COVID killed that. In other words, now it is an organization-specific analysis. You could bring me 3 organizations, all in Florida, all with 6 practices, all with 6 locations, with $2 million in EBITDA, and one might be unsellable. They might look at it and be like, we're not even going to make an offer. We don't even want it. One might get a premium, and the other one might get a completely different number, because a lot of things go into that. A lot of things, you know, that you're talking about. Are they duct taped? Are they integrated? You know, what is the skill of the leader? Or do we have to hire, you know, a professional management team? What's the culture like? You know, so many things. And if the culture is not good, somebody might just not buy it. They might say, look, you have a toxic culture. We're not in the business of buying toxic waste.
How would
We're
they determine that though, Brian, when you say that, like the culture,
turnover, number one. Yeah, I got it. Turnover. If you're hemorrhaging employees and everybody's leaving all the time, that's a usually an indicator that your culture sucks, because if people like coming to work, you're not going to hemorrhage employees. You'll lose them now and then, but you're not going to just keep losing people. Two, they're going to ask them. Okay, they never did this. Now, as part of the diligence, they're going to say, hey, we'd like to visit with your staff. Is that okay? And they're going to sit down with the staff and they're going to ask very, very candid questions. And, you know, you would think the staff might give the company line, but the staff members are very candid. And I'll tell you why. Because a lot of these folks in this marketplace, there's plenty of job opportunities. You know, they don't have to work at your place. You know, they've got plenty of other opportunities. So when these investors come in, they're pretty candid. They shoot straight. They tell them what's going on. And if they get really, really bad reviews, you know, in other words, you're the owner and your staff gives you a real bad review. When the investors come in, they don't have nice things to say about you. It's not going to bode well for the sale process, you know, and a lot of the staff members, I'll commend them. You know, there's a staff shortage. You know, you're really not going to be in a hurry to fire them for telling the truth. And when investors come in and ask them and they interview and they're very candid about what goes on in the practice, some things directly, but some things indirectly. If you don't have a good culture, you're going to struggle. You know, you might be profitable as an operation. And
yeah, that's a good data point. I didn't, you know, I just, everyone throws around the word culture so much. And I was like, I wonder how someone from the outside looking in would quantify culture without being there, you know, because obviously in their due diligence or their quality of earnings, they're not there on the daily looking at things. You know,
I mean, generally the way they're going to look at it. Okay. And this is not necessarily the way I look at it when I talk to people about good culture and things you can do. And when we host, you know, on my own show, podcasts and webinars and things about culture, it's not necessarily everything I would do. But when the investor looks at it, just down and dirty, what they're wanting to see is, number one, are you hemorrhaging, you know, staff? Because if you are, then we're going to buy that problem and we're going to have to like have a headhunter on Rolodex or full time stationed in our office. It's true. Some DSOs have headhunters stationed in the office. That's where they work because there's just so much, you know, placements that have to happen and so much turnover. If that's the case, it's not going to bode well. Two, do people like coming to work? When you talk to them, do they enjoy their job? Do they feel like invested, like this is their place, not working for you? And if you can get at least that, where you're not in any way having high turnover and people appear to enjoy coming to work and seem invested, that will suffice for a sale. Somebody will be interested in buying. But, you know, there's a lot more to culture than just those things. But if you can get that, at least you've met the minimum threshold and somebody will be interested in buying you.
I feel like this is like a return to normal. Like we're talking about this like this is an aberrant requirement for businesses to have same store sales growth, positive work culture. The entire world of small business has always valued this stuff. I just think the DSO market got really heated up and was just an arbitrage play on, you know, multiple arbitrage. So if we really are being honest here, I was always surprised that, you know, Acme DSO was looking and advertising to a dentist saying, hey, are you sick and tired of your business? Do you want to leave and go fishing? Great, we'll buy you. If that's your play, your acquisition play to take a great business that's had a good doctor and founder and send him fishing and try to make his practice great without him, that's a very hard order to fill.
Well, that was never the play. I mean,
It was marketing.
There were a few and they found.
There were many. And they're still around, by the way. So I'm the one. I don't know if you get the mailers, Brian, but I get the mailers.
Yeah,
well, literally says
that's a failed proposition. You know, the ones that I have typically seen do well and most of the deals that I do, and I'm not questioning you, Craig, you know, people got different. It's a big marketplace. I mean, the DSO.
No, but I'm just saying you don't get the advertisements that I get.
No.
Hey, doc, are you frustrated? You're not a dentist. So I could send you, I'll redirect my mail to you, my two pieces of DSO solicitation per week. Where it's and it literally shows a doctor in scrubs, and these are one of the biggest DSOs out there.
I'll tell you what, I'm one of the few people that would like to see that.
Somebody else would say, hell no, Craig,
don't send that. I actually would like to see that.
Pointing out a hole in your knowledge base. I know you're all knowing, but this is one segment you don't know. It literally is, and I'll send it to you, a man in scrubs, and then he has a daydream or something, and he's fit with a fishing pole. Are you tired? Do you want to spend more quality of life? Are you sick and tired of running your dental practice? Do you want to go fishing? I'll buy your practice. So imagine you go into a law firm and say, I want to acquire your law firm. I know you don't want to practice law anymore. Go off and go fishing and I'll take over what's left. What's that organization going to be like without its founder?
I think the idea, look, I get what you're saying. I actually do want to see it. I'm not even kidding. Please send
I'll screenshot it. I'll send it to you.
Email it or something. But the idea is this, okay? If that's not a good, you know, characterization of the idea, I get it. But the idea needs to be this, okay? You didn't go to dental school to learn HR, to learn how to negotiate with Henry Schein or Patterson. You didn't go to, you know, to learn how to hire and fire and discipline employees, how to negotiate with your landlord, how to negotiate with insurance carriers. We will take all the, you know, administrative non-office functions away from you. And by doing that, you're going to become a better clinician, exactly what you went to school for, and you'll have more free time and can go fishing. I support. The idea that suddenly you affiliate and you stop working hard and can just like go to the beach, I do not support that. But I don't feel like that's what the intent is. I think the intent is you have to treat all your patients and then you have to be the landlord, you have to be HR, you have to negotiate with the insurance carriers, you have to, you know, deal with, you know, a whole myriad of other back office things. If we take all of that off your plate and all you have to do is what you're already good at, treating patients, you'll get some more free time built into that process. I'm supportive of that. I think that's a fair characterization. But the idea that it's like, yippee, I affiliated, now I'm on the beach all day. No, I mean, that's not.
It's just it's an advertising to product market fit the problem. And I'll screenshot those and I'll send them to you. I have your cell phone.
I love this example, Brian, about the postcard in the mail from the fisherman. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah,
you should see it.
The other thing, though, I do want, you were saying this before we got bogged down on the DSO, you know, advertisements, which I want to see, is the Costco thing. I was at a business symposium in Dallas, and there were some Costco and Walmart representatives there, and they were like, "Oh, you dentist guys, you guys are a bunch of idiots." And I listened to it for a second, and I got like mildly offended, and I was like, "Well, why? Like, you know, why are we idiots here? I'm actually doing great, and there's a great evolution in dentistry, and I think I'm terrific." And they said, "Well, that's fine." They said, "You know, maybe." But I'm going to tell you why you're idiots. You guys just buy stuff. All you do is buy stuff. Before we open up another Costco, we know every cost, what everything costs, what our utilities are, what our overhead is to, like, you know, fractions of a penny. And we have squeezed every last profit out of this store. And then once we figured it out, we're like, okay, now we'll open up another one. You guys just keep buying things. Like, you don't even understand, like, maybe at a high level it's profitable, but you don't know what your cost of goods is, what your overhead is, you know, where you could save money, where you could make more money. You just say, let's buy something else. And that was the impetus behind the remark about us dentist guys being stupid. And when I really thought about it, first I wanted to like punch the guy. But then when he explained it, I said, well, you know, I mean, that is a little bit about what our M&A markets were like. But now, if you said normalization, yeah, I mean, people have to pay attention to same store growth now in this marketplace. They can no longer say, look, we'll just buy 10 more practices. It'll increase our EBITDA and it'll be fine. Some DSOs can't buy anything right now. Others thought they were going to buy 10. And you know what? They can buy one or two. So you kind of got to focus on same store growth. And it's the right thing to do.
Of course it is.
I mean, you guys have your mastermind. I mean, what are you going to do? Tell your guys, I mean, I'm making fun of you guys on the show, but what are you going to do? Tell people that paid you money to learn stuff? Oh, don't worry about, you know, figuring out your overhead and how you could lower expenses and increase.
Just go buy more.
Let's just buy more. I mean, no.
That has been.
At least not with the numbers, you guys. Everybody listening, these guys, they came at me in Orlando. I was trying to hide. They ran out. They were like, hey, our guys are increasing their profitability by like 34 and 40%. I mean, the numbers you guys are throwing out there, you have to focus on same store growth. There's no way you can achieve the numbers you're achieving in your mastermind if you're not focused on same store growth.
Hey docs, how many times have you gone to a meeting only to come home to be served with a bunch of friction on all the things that you learned, right? The team didn't participate in the education that you got, therefore now you're coming home and the team is saying, hey, just give until Thursday, it'll go away. So why not flip that on its head, right? Why don't you bring your team to the Bulletproof Summit? It's going to be in June 14th and 15th, where you're going to learn and innovate with your team. You're going to create massive alignment, and I promise you it's where the rubber is going to meet the road. So join us again, bulletproofsummit.com, and we'll see you this summer. Yeah.
And
so that was kind of,
I'm happy at what they're at this point, by the way, because this is what normal business is. And I think the other chapters, the preceding chapters, were just fairy tale BS, you know, so I'm happy that we're here.
Well, you know, no one cared about leaving money on the table. You know, it's sort of like what would be a good example, like the Depression versus, like, you know, 2023 in the suburbs or something, right?
Your grandparents, Starbucks has
a great grandparents in the Depression. You know, you eat your plate and maybe there's just half of a chicken cutlet and they put it in a bag and they seal it and it goes in the refrigerator and you're going to eat half of that chicken cutlet on your next meal because you don't want to waste it. Today, you know, some kid in the suburbs, you know, they eat half their thing, throw it out. It doesn't matter because, you know, in times of prosperity, that's a little bit of the way people behave. But in really, really tough times, they save every grain of rice, every last little piece of meat. And, you know, you're going to reuse it. And I think we're getting to tough times where you just can't leave money on the table anymore. And people are not willing to do that. They are now, in a very responsible way, looking at their operations and saying, how can we maximize our profits?
So that was a big emphasis of the panel, right? Was talking about the same store sales growth. What else did you kind of walk away there thinking? And who was your other panel members? I mean, it was
Mike impressive. White from CLA was on the panel for sure, and he's a real great KPI guy, key performance indicators. He's one of the leading accountants in the industry, and he had a lot of KPIs to talk about. A good guy to listen to, a friend of mine. Guy from Darby was there. They had a person from Straumann, you know, was there, and they were going through, you know, what the global and domestic market sort of look like and innovation. And, you know, Tanner Applegate, who's a big technology guy, was the moderator. Mm-hmm. And we really, you know, I think the takeaway is not just let's focus on same store growth, because that's just stupid to say that. Like, how do you do it? Well, one of the keys to doing it is innovations. And we were talking, Peter, about all kinds of stuff. Artificial intelligence being the biggest, most valuable game changer and innovation in the history of the industry. I could talk about that for 3 hours with you guys. Patient finance and the innovation of patients without any engagement with the staff can get approved in less than 5 minutes. So people that can't afford treatment can now get treatment, and that increases same store growth. Membership plans, discount plans will do that. Practice management software that in real time can look at KPIs and help you correct in real time. There's things like Patient Prism, our friend Amal Nergurdkar out there, who the AI will listen to your phone calls and tell you why patients are not making appointments.
Yeah, we use Patient Prism. Craig and I both do.
Correct in real time. Mm-hmm. So all of these innovations, you know, between for revenue cycle management too, between diagnostic AI, between patient finance, between revenue cycle management, between PMS, between patient retention things, between discount plans, membership plans, all of these innovations contribute to your same store growth and help you without making significant investments. You don't got to buy anything. Sometimes you got to pay some subscription fees, but, you know, they're affordable for the practice. They're not going to bankrupt anybody, and you pay some subscriptions fees, or you implement these things, and you can significantly increase your same store growth without having to do an M&A deal and tie up any capital. That's sort of the how innovation can contribute to same store growth.
Yep. And a lot of it, that's what you're saying. The overarching theme was kind of like how technology and AI and was helping augment all those techs, right? From a practice management, from a call, from a training, you know, it can make everything better. Patient, you know, financing approvals are now kind of baked in some software. So you are armed to have a conversation. I mean, Craig, you and I just had a call, an hour ago with someone who, you know, who's kind of like using that from insurance verification. And then you can automatically see it's an AirPay. They can automatically see who's approved and how much without actually running a report.
I was proud of that software development. We had a conversation with them maybe like 6 months ago, Pete, right?
Yeah.
6 months.
Yeah, but you gave
them that. I was just kind of spitballing with them, like, do you have in your software, because they're insurance verification software, and with Peter, I use them. Peter introduced me to him. I said, hey, do you have a mechanism to find out who has orthodontic coverage? Because, you know, having adult orthodontic coverage is fairly rare. And when you tell a guy like, you know, or a, you know, person that's in their 30s or 40s and they say, hey, by the way, your insurance company will pay for $2,500 worth of your Invisalign, that's pretty outstanding because most people think of this as an elective service. So they built in, since the last time I talked, an ability to, with an Excel spreadsheet, to find out who has that. They partnered with CareCredit so that you could find out who's a CareCredited card carrier already. So then you have this really ultra hot lead of, hey, you've got $2,500 or insurance coverage, plus you're pre-approved. And just all AI and software driven, like talk about same store sales growth. And that level of information is massive to a decision for a patient.
Yeah, you know, the issue there is privacy regulations, and you got to walk a tightrope with that kind of stuff. But yes, that's absolutely game changing. The diagnostic AI is incredible. I mean, just don't know here, you know, this thing is almost 100%. You know, you're relying on dentists sometimes in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. And look, I can't drive at night the way I used to when I was younger. So you're trying to look at these x-rays, you know, what you can catch or what you can't catch.
The quality of your monitor. If your monitor is 4 years old or greater, I heard you lose like 50%. I don't know if I made that up, but one of my doctors came in from a CE course this past week. And if your monitor is like 4 or 5 years old, the grayscale of the x-ray is not rendered to be clinically diagnostic.
The AI catches just about everything. And basically, it's an ethical way to do more cases. I mean, you know, you would never want to do anything that was unnecessary, but it's right there in black and white. The AI catches it and says, that's cavity. You missed it, but there it is in pink. We're going to illuminate it.
There's another layer to it too, Brian. It catches it, but when you show the image to a patient, it's lit up. The case acceptance goes up. So let's say the
diagnosis. You didn't see my trip to the dentist? We have 27,000 views on it. My trip to the dentist where we put the Pearl AI on and it caught a very early stage lesion that normally they would just wait and watch. 27,000 people. So you'll send me the DSO advertisement. I'll send you my trip to the dentist video so you can check this out. 27,000 people watched it in action and I sat from the perspective of the patient. So when you tell me this stuff, I saw the pink thing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Miss it, but they illuminated it in pink. They said normally we would wait and watch this, but we're going to put Curadont on it, which is a product from Vivartis that they say regenerates enamel. It's got a bunch of patents and other things.
Interesting. So never heard of it.
Well, how did Ophir? We've got to catch up offline. But anyway, they put the Curadont product on there to regenerate enamel. And basically, you know, I was a believer. I mean, I love my dentist, but I would trust her most likely regardless. But sitting from the perspective of the patient, I was a believer. They ran my bite wing x-rays. They put the AI Pearl Second Opinion product over it. Right there in pink, giant. And they said, you know what? Here's good news. We can tell you how much the lesion has penetrated, I guess, the enamel. And it was at the lowest level, they said. So you've got a lot of options. It hasn't penetrated to the degree where we would think about a cavity right now. Let's put the Curadont on there. But if it has penetrated, they got it right there. They'll tell you, hey, you got to get this cavity today because look how deep. See, watch this. See how deep that's penetrated. You're going to be a candidate for a root canal if we don't get something done right now. And from patient's perspective, Craig, just sitting in that chair, it's compelling. I mean, you're like, wow, this thing don't lie. All right, sign me up. What are we going to do here?
Brian, you should just really round out this education and just do the 4 years, get the damn dental degree. I mean, you're right there. Listen, I don't know what your hourly wage is, but with the median average, you know, the median salary of a dentist at 155 grand, it may be a compelling business move for you to go and get your doctorate.
I'm doing a little better than that right now, but you know, I think like many things, the business people do a little better than the actual workers.
I'm just saying you have such a passion for dentistry. It rings through to the audience. You got so excited about these products. You may be, I'm just putting it out there. We'll take this offline, but I think you should go ahead.
DMD, right?
You should.
Yeah,
I have a passion for the business of dentistry and the industry.
You just got excited about x-rays, brother. I just saw it. You were on fire.
You guys don't even do that. I mean, the last person, and for anybody listening, if like that little lesion I have, the last person on earth I would have fill that is Craig. I mean, I would go to like whiskey and like myself before I would let
bite in a bullet.
You guys are doing great though, because like me, you're focused on the business of this whole thing. I mean, that's just what my passion is.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love that you're, you know, representing the best interests of dentistry, but yet you also understand the clinical ramifications. You're excited about how dentistry is improving because there's a lot of narrative right now saying that the heyday is over. And
this is the most exciting time. Yeah, anybody that says that, they need to just like just reevaluate their position, because
this is
the most exciting time in the history of dentistry is right now. If you looked at like George Washington, what was that, like 1776 with his wooden teeth, like George Washington to say 2015 or something, there was just like a little bit of advancement from 2015 to where we are now. The thing has been like a rocket ship. It's been most exciting time in the history of dentistry.
Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but you talked to a lot of like aggregators and private equity, and they look at dentistry more as a tech platform now. Is that accurate? Did I hear that correctly? Meaning like they look at potentially the application of all the things you just mentioned, right? And then they see kind of where it's potentially underperforming, and now they can apply tech and look at it like a tech arbitrage, if you will.
See is the tech puts it on like a turbo booster. You ever watch those Fast and Furious movies and like, you know, Vin Diesel's going and it looks like Vin Diesel's like losing the race and then he hits like nitrous gas. And all of a sudden he shoots up and he's winning the race. Well, that's sort of what this is. You already have a recession proof, you know, pandemic proof business that's performing very, very well. Like even when I was kidding, up to 2015 was performing very, very well, you know, recession proof business. But now you're putting those, whatever they got in the movie, those nitrous canisters. And now you have the ability through technology to hit that and go into like turbo booster type, you know, levels. So, yeah, I mean, technology is part of it, but you've taken something that's one of the most, you know, recession proof, overperforming segments of the economy, and now you're putting it on steroids on top of it. So who wouldn't want to get excited or interested in that?
I have a question for you, Brian. And you spoke, you know, briefly, you touched upon something like the business of dentistry and you're excited about that. Let's kind of shift gears just for a second. I had a recent podcast with the president of the ADA, and I was asking your questions because, you know, there is that number, a median dental salary, let's call it 150, 160, whatever. And the ever increasing cost of education. If your son or daughter wanted to be a dentist at this particular moment, and how do we know what a dentist is going to be? Are they going to be exceptional?
Go to a DSO. No, I mean, that one, you know, I've been taught, and I'm teaching at a couple dental schools right now. And the whole thing is, who wants to get out of dental school right now? I mean, unless you're independently wealthy or something, who wants to get out of dental school right now with, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, $600,000 of debt, and then go to the bank and take out a loan and open up your own practice, or take out a loan to buy into somebody else's practice, and then have all that headache of running your own practice and risks involved and having to compete against DSOs, when you can graduate dental school, join a DSO, not have to take out any loans. They have certain loan forgiveness programs, certain things they'll do to help you the more years of service you stay at the DSOs. I mean, it's as compelling a business case as there ever was in 2024 for somebody. If you love being a dentist and that's what you want to do and you want to actually treat patients all day long, you got to do the DSO model. I mean, you can
specifically still what though, Brian? I'm sorry, I'm slow in the take here. What are you saying to your son or daughter? Go work at a DSO. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, there are more opportunities for advancement and for career satisfaction at a DSO than any other place right now. I'm not saying, if we're talking to a hypothetical son or daughter, what I'm saying is if you've graduated dental school and you've got loans and other things, there are more opportunities at a DSO than there are outside of the DSO system.
Let me tell you one other factor that you might not be aware of, and maybe you are because you're pretty in-depth in dentistry like we are. I've heard of probably like between a half a dozen to a dozen stories in the last 5 years of an associate working for a private office, non-DSO, that they get their 32 to 35% or whatever the number is, and they literally have not been paid for work that they've done. And I'm not talking $5,000. I'm talking checks outstanding, $20,000, $30,000.
Really? So, you've heard this a lot?
Yes. Hmm. And I just listened on our mastermind call just an hour, 2 hours ago, 2 hours ago. I said, who here has heard of that or have it happen to them? And half the group raised their hand.
Wow. So, well, I mean, look, here's the thing. Okay. Yes.
DSOs won't do that is what I'm trying to say.
They can't do that. I have heard that, what you're saying, and it's one or two things. I think a small percentage of the time, it's somebody just being dishonest and cheating you. I mean, that happens. Right. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen, but that's right. a small percentage of the time. More percentage of the time is you have people, like I've been saying on your show for the first 30 minutes here, that are unsophisticated in business and they just don't really know how to properly do this stuff. And the risk of you not being properly compensated is much higher, you know, with just a solo practitioner out there. At a DSO, they have an HR department. They know what class action labor and employment lawsuits are. They don't want class action lawsuits. They are going to make sure to the penny they have calculated everything you're owed under your employment agreement and you're going to get it. And God forbid they made a mistake. You know exactly who to call down to HR, and they're going to fix that thing that afternoon and you're going to move on. So
right. the narrative, at least when I, over the last 5 or 10 years, what I've been hearing is, don't work for a DSO. So when I tell a young dentist, like, hey, that's where I would go, it's often met with like, what are you crazy? Like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, the law schools are behind. Not the law schools, maybe the law schools. The dental schools are behind. I spent a lot of time talking to deans and other things, and I say, you got to modernize this. And they're taking some of my lectures and syndicating them and going to show them virtually to a lot of the schools because, I mean, several layers. One, the standard of care. If you don't know, you guys, I think, do, about 5 years ago passed solo and group practices, meaning DSOs on average have a higher standard of care. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do is somebody's watching the store. They have AI and they have people looking and they're like, geez, Peter, everybody else did like 3 stainless steel crowns last month. You did 72. What the heck were you thinking? You better come meet with us and we're going to now audit all your files. And if we think you're doing something wrong, you're either going to get more education or you're going to get fired. If you're doing that as a solo practitioner, as long as you're not killing anybody or harming anybody, the dental board's not going to get involved. You can do whatever you want. If you're working as an associate for a solo, he's not going to audit your files.
There's more quality control mechanisms.
Pressure makes doctors better. Cleveland Clinic proved that a long time ago.
Quality control, like you wouldn't believe, and the AI is making it even more sophisticated. If we're on this show even 2 years from now, the AI is going to be conducting a lot of the quality control, and they're going to red flag people. You know, the actual human being will have to make the final determination, but they're going to say, hey, we just ran the AI on Peter, and we got 37 red flags. So now, clinical director, you know there's a problem with Peter. Follow up on these 37 things and go figure it out. And you're going to be in a meeting with somebody with a spreadsheet and they're going to be like, well, Peter, we got 37 things we got to talk about, and they're going to run through them all. And if they think you're worth keeping, they're going to say, all right, we're going to send you to education on our nickel. We're going to educate you. We're going to have somebody shadow you. We're going to mentor you. We're going to make sure you know what you're doing. If you're not worth keeping, you're going to be gone. They're going to be like, we had 37 red flags. You're not cutting it. You got to go. That doesn't happen in a solo environment. That doesn't happen with an associate working for a solo.
Hey everybody, let's hang out in Scottsdale, Arizona. Join Pete and me at the 2024 Bulletproof Summit at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback in Scottsdale. Immerse yourself in innovation and inspiration, unite and strengthen your team, and earn 16 CE credits. That's June 14th and 15th. Register at bulletproofsummit.com. We can't wait to connect with you and your entire team. See you soon, guys. Very interesting. So these compounding factors, the DSOs are, surpassing, or the group practices are surpassing in clinical, standard of care. And the opportunities are pointing towards doctors joining DSOs. Do you think that the entire profession, or the majority of the profession, greater than 90%, becomes consolidated at some point?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers I'm throwing out is about 31-32% now. 10 to 15 years, it's going to be 75-80%. I mean, there'll always be, little pockets of solos. You're down in like, I don't know, I'll make this up. You're in Des Moines, Iowa, and, this person opens up over here, and for some reason, the DSOs don't want to go there. It's a small town, and you got your practice. I mean, and there's a million other reasons, one of my clients that's the dentist to the Hollywood stars, that's his niche. He networks at all those Hollywood parties, and he does a good job for celebrity A, and then she tells celebrity B, and he's got a nice following. I mean, he can't replicate that practice when he retires, but a DSO is not going to buy
that. He's the talent
for that. So there will always be pockets of regular, good old fashioned solo practitioners. But I think, just like there's mom and pop hardware stores, you can see them. It's not all Walmart and Target. It's a lot Walmart and Target, but it's not all Walmart and Target. It won't be all DSOs, but it's going to be 80%, 80, 85% in 15 years.
And then what happens to valuations as it goes from 30 to 75%? Do they go
supply and demand kind of thing?
Supply and demand. You'll probably get a premium because there'll be a lot of people bidding on a lot less assets. I mean, you know,
did that happen in veterinary as it became more and more consolidated, or derm? Did you see that?
Those multiples got crazy in vet. They were like 19 and 20 times for some offices in vet. So yeah, I mean, as the supply and the inventory goes down, you know, probably the multiples and the prices are going to go up, but then we're going to hit a wall. It's going to be 85, 88% consolidation. And probably that 12% might be firm, you know?
Brian, isn't there an inflection point of where it will stop? And bear with me for a second, because wouldn't that amount of consolidation be an existential threat to insurance companies? Because once they consolidate that high, then they hold all the keys to the power, right? Of negotiation, all that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, yeah, but nobody likes insurance companies. I mean, I don't think anybody's going
to. I'm saying it'd be an existential threat to the insurance companies themselves, right?
But you have that in medicine now. No, I mean, yes, put it this way. The profits of the insurance companies may go down a little bit with the gigantic. It's not existential. I mean, when you say existential, are they in business? No,
they're not. Well, they exist or not, right? But it's not that bad.
But you're going to see, I mean, this is what happened with the consolidation of medicine. You know, dentistry's behind medicine, but you've got several major healthcare groups. And yes, they negotiate huge discounts with carriers and other things. And sometimes if you can't beat them, join them. Some of the insurance carriers buy the big hospital groups, or they do that so that they can, you know, have a ready-made network. So there's a lot of arrows that each party has in their quiver that the insurance companies have. They're sitting on billions of dollars. They can buy things and get into the industry, you know, get into the business of, say, DSOs or, you know, MSOs if they want to. So it makes for a lot of excitement and a lot of maneuvering, but I wouldn't say an existential threat. I do think reimbursement rates probably get a little more favorable, though, as the industry consolidates.
Craig, do you have anything else? I was going to ask Brian, you know, in kind of closing, where he feels deal flow goes from here. Meaning, you know, is it predicated on interest rates, Brian, or do you feel it remains the same? Have we kind of plateaued in this space? Like, where are you seeing an indication, if you had to extrapolate a year from now we're talking, what do you feel like transpired?
It depends on who the president is. Okay. This is an election year. It depends. Okay. It depends. Like, I'm noticing right now, I don't know when people are going to see this show, but if you're looking right now, we're talking, you know, literally here on Tuesday after the Super Bowl is when we're together, and the market's down like 700 points today. Why? Because there was a report that went out that inflation is still with us. We thought it was coming down, and there was a very
Does anybody think it's coming down? It's not. I mean, I know they can say whatever they want, that shrinkflation and all that stuff, but like those that go to the supermarket and try to buy things, I don't know.
I don't think anyone's thought it's coming down.
They always come down. It's a cycle, you know, and I think this is not a political show, but I think if a Republican gets in the White House, they're going to make sure it comes down with their policies and spending and things that they do. So a lot of it is going to depend on the presidential election. Also, who's in control of Congress, regardless of the president, if one party firmly gets control of both houses of Congress, that could change things, you know, dramatically. But right now, the interest rates are constraining the M&A markets. There are still deals being done. And I'll tell you, if we have a minute, you know, the deals that are getting done right now is you're like a 62-year-old dentist. You've been very good with your money. You're basically financially secure at this point, but you have this asset that you might as well get something for. Right. You're like, look, I could retire and close the door if I want to, but they're going to pay me a multiple. Let me go ahead and do this deal right now. You don't care if you get a 5, 6, or 7 multiple if you're that person.
Where are things, though, trading? Like, so for that example, right, like what would you say you could if that dentist came to you and they said, hey, what kind of multiple could I expect, Brian? What would you say?
They're coming down. I would say if you and I were having this discussion in 2015, I would say you would get a 5 multiple. For a while during 21, 22, you'd get an 8 multiple. Like literally it went up from a 5 to an 8 for a solo practice. They're coming down a little bit now. It depends. If you get the, you know, the brokers on here, they'll tell you they're still paying 7s. They're coming down. They're okay. 6s. Okay. They're 6s, 6.5s now. The market's right sizing based on interest rates. And certain dentists, if you're in your 60s and you're financially secure, you don't care if you get a 6 or a 6.5 instead of a 7 or an 8. But if you're you guys, you know, you guys are, you know, I know each of you have your own respective organizations and, you know, you're going to go to market. You're not going to take, you're like, hey, I want to maximize my value. I'm young enough. I can hold this for a few more years. So you guys, just hypothetically picking on you, probably aren't good candidates to do a deal in the conditions today. But somebody that's, you know, 60 years old and they're financially secure and it really doesn't matter whether they get a 5 or a 6 or a 7, they just want to monetize their practice and then go to the golf course because they're in their 60s. It's good market for those
guys. All right. So that's the advice to the 60-year-olds. To the rest of us, it's head down from Brian, increase your same store sales growth.
Increase your EBITDA.
Is that the takeaway?
EBITDA, always same store growth is a good way to do it, but always increase your EBITDA right now.
Got it.
And a third layer to add on that, build a practice or a business that you don't want to exit from and do what you do. Because as Peter and I always say, when you exit a business, you screenshot the money in your bank account. It looks really cool. And then that following week, you have an obligation to invest in another business. You have to deploy your capital.
It's a public equity or private equity, you have to take that money and go make money is what you're saying.
So it's interesting. The interest rates are high right now. So you got to do the least amount in this environment right now. I was looking at a CD.
Right, but inflation's high too. So even if you're getting 6% on your CD, you could argue you're just kind of not, you're treading water.
Right.
And if you have a liquidity event, you don't want to be pulling capital to live your life. So I have a lot of friends that have had liquidity events and there's not too many of them. It for very few, I should say, it went the way they thought. And there's a lot of regret in that space. So what I think at Bulletproof, Peter and I stand for is like Team Never Sell, build the practice that you love and that can create the type of lifestyle that you want, whether that's passive because you're an entrepreneur or you maximize for your practice and your clinical production. But do that and then you don't have to sell. And when the time comes and you're 62 and you want to golf or whatever the number is, you can do that. But I think there's a narrative that says to the young dentist out there, go ahead and buy 4, 5, 6 practices, strap them all together and go to market. And that's not always the best plan for them.
Well, 60% of the people still don't go to the dentist. So there's a lot of runway to form organizations, grow your practice, open up new offices. But the responsible alternative to Team Never Sell, which I like that, by the way, Team Never Sell. It's amusing. But the responsible, which you can do that. It's a way to go. But the responsible alternative to that is pick the right growth partner. Okay. You're not going to exit. You're going to do a 60-40 deal. You're going to take 60% of the cash at closing. 40% gets rolled over. And if you do things right, your 40% will get returned 3 or 4 to 1. And that you can do several times if you're in your 40s before
I think
you retire.
Too, the logic
the right
is
partner though. You need to
Brian, have you read that
actually
book, Built to Sell?
I did.
Okay. So that logic, and I think when Craig's saying like Team Never Sell is like, you know, in that book, he hates his business, wants to sell it. And the broker or his mentor trains him to kind of make a business where he likes it. And then lo and behold, guess what? Didn't want to sell it anymore. Right. And lo and behold, that business was worth a lot more now because it was had a lot less friction in the operations. It had operations manuals. It worked for the owner. And I think that's where, I think that's kind of where you're going, Craig, is people usually surrender or sell because they're done. I'm just selling. I'm over it. I'm done. Well, I can't do this HR problem anymore. I can't deal with these people anymore, you know? And they say, I want to sell. And so we look at it sometimes as an act of people just, they're worn out. They're worn out.
There's a lot of people that love what they're doing, but if the market is returning and they
totally
pick the right partner,
totally agree.
Take your 60% off the table and then turn your 40% into 3 or 4 times with the 60%.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you there.
Love
I was just expanding on what Craig's team never sell kind of logic was.
Well, listen, I'm all for building an organization that theoretically you don't want to sell because it's such a great organization. I do think maybe you got to look at some strategic stuff, but I agree. Don't build an organization that sucks. I mean, you need to build an organization with a great culture and one that you're proud of no matter what you do, whether you sell it or don't sell it. This is something that people love coming to work there. I'm all for what you guys are doing in general. I think some of your, you know, some of your mastermind, you know, folks that you work with, I think it might be good for them to take some money after they've taken your advice, built a world-class organization. They might want to take 60% off the table and keep growing. There's a lot of strategic options, but the way you guys are counseling people, yes, I'm a big fan of building organizations that way.
Yep. Totally agree. We're on the same page there for sure.
Yeah.
Brian, tell us about, Craig, unless you've got anything, I want to talk about Brian's summit that he's got in the summer. It's in July, right?
July 10th through the 12th. We're going to see you guys this year. I mean, I'm just putting you on the spot. We're
I want to come. Hey, who doesn't want to come to Colorado in the summer?
That's
Craig,
right.
Craig, you're already going to be there, I think, right?
I will be there on the 15th.
Now you're going to come on the 10th or something. But yeah,
we're coming. We're coming, Brian.
We set an attendance record last year. It was the all-time attendance record in the history of the DSO industry. We had just over 2,000 people there. Last year was our 10th anniversary. Belinda Carlisle sang. We had Andre Agassi, tennis player. We had a drone show. This year, we've got some really exciting celebrities we're getting ready to announce that are going to speak there. Plus, we got the drone show back. We're probably going to have up to 2,400 people or so there. Incredible event.
It's at the Gaylord Rockies, right?
It's we say Denver, but it's Aurora, Colorado. It's by the airport.
Yeah.
It's the Gaylord Rocky Mountain Resort. You know, it's 10 minutes, you know, from the airport.
So what's the website? Just go to dykema.com and then look for the event?
DykemaDSO.com is what it is. Okay. DykemaDSO.com, and you can register. And, you know, I think we're going to get you guys a discount code of some sort if we don't already. And anybody that listens to your show.
Yeah, we'll put it up.
Yeah, I'd love to see Brian at ours as well. Maybe there's a way to fit you into ours. We got one on June 14th and 15th.
The month before.
Scottsdale. Right. That'd be really cool.
Scottsdale. Yeah, I love going out there. Love to be involved because I really love your message. I mean, I love what you guys are doing with your mastermind group. I love seeing the results. People like, hey, I grew my practice 30%. I grew mine 40%. I slept during their thing, but it still went up 17%. Even like bad guys that were like, oh, like we only paid attention for about 25% of it, but we're still up.
Yeah, well, we work with the team, so you don't have to be the nucleus of everything.
They can slept expand. During Peter's, but they listened to Craig and it was 17. If they listen to both you guys, it's 35-40%, but I love that same store growth. And I think, you know, your guys are building it the right way and you're building organizations reflect, you know, something we can all be proud of in the industry. And that's what I love talking about.
Awesome.
Thanks, Brian. That's awesome.
Great chat, man.
You recovered
appreciate your time,
that
Brian.
Insult about not letting me do your filling, your class two filling.
He's still reeling about that.
I'm holding my ground on that, my friend. I think you're a terrific.
You don't want me to do your filling.
I don't want you to do that filling. Dr. Logan is terrific. My dentist, she'll do it if she has to. Yeah.
Yeah. But listen, you don't need it because you have Regeneron on your teeth or whatever it was called. What was that product called again?
Gerdont, and it regenerates enamel, and I'm excited about that. I mean, that's some awesome. Other time we can talk about those products.
Isn't it great, Craig, when the attorney is teaching you about dental products?
Yeah.
Isn't that?
Well, disclosure, did you know about this, Peter? Honestly.
No, I did not. Okay. I did not.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your honesty.
Because
if that was me,
together.
I would have thrown you under the bus and been like, of course I know about Curadon.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
I couldn't
I'm
do
on
it.
Their board, dude.
I couldn't do it. All right, Brian. I appreciate you, buddy. We'll see you soon.
I'll see you soon, guys. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Brian.